Odrade smiled at the acolyte beside her in the dining hall. How would you like to be a horse?
What?
The word was startled out of her, but she responded to Mother Superior's smile. Nothing alarming in that. Warm, even. Everyone said Mother Superior permitted affections. You don't understand, of course, Odrade said. No, Mother Superior, still smiling and patient. Odrade allowed her gaze to quest over the young face. Clear blue eyes, not yet touched by the engulfing blue of spice agony. A mouth almost like Belle's, but without the viciousness. Dependable muscles, and dependable intelligence. She would be good at anticipating Mother Superior's needs. Witness her map assignment and that report. Sensitive. Went with her superior intelligence. Not likely to rise to the very top, but always in key positions where you needed her qualities. Why did I sit beside this one? Odrade frequently selected a particular companion at mealtime visits. Acolytes, mostly. They could be so revealing. Reports often found their way to Mother Superior's workroom. Personal observations from proctors about one acolyte or another. But sometimes Odrade chose a seat for no reason she could explain. As I did tonight. Why this one? Conversation rarely occurred unless Mother Superior initiated it. Gentle initiation, usually, easing into more intimate matters. Others around them listened avidly. At such moments, Odrade often produced a manner of almost religious serenity. It soothed nervous ones. Acolytes were, well, acolytes. But Mother Superior was the supreme witch of them all. Nervousness was natural. Someone behind Odrade whispered, "She has Straggy on the coals tonight." On the coals. Odrade knew the expression. It had been used in her acolyte days. So this one was named Straggy. Let it be unspoken for now. Names carry magic. "Do you enjoy tonight's dinner?" Odrade asked. "It's acceptable, Mother Superior." One tried not to give false opinions, but Straggy was confused by the shift in conversation. "They've overcooked it," Odrade said. "Serving so many, how can they please everyone, Mother Superior?" "She speaks her mind, and speaks it well." "Your left hand is trembling," Odrade said. "I'm nervous with you, Mother Superior, and I've just come from the practice floor. Very tiring today." Odrade analyzed the tremors. "They have you doing the long arm lift. Was it painful in your day, Mother Superior?"
"In those ancient times?"
"Just as painful as today. Pain teaches, they told me." "That softened things. Shared experiences. The patter of the proctors." "I don't understand about horses, Mother Superior." Straggy looked at her plate. "This cannot be horse meat. I'm sure I..." Odrade laughed loudly, attracting startled looks. She put a hand on Straggy's arm and subsided to a gentle smile. "Thank you, my dear. No one has made me laugh that much in years. I hope this is the beginning of a long and joyous association." "Thank you, Mother Superior, but I will explain about the horse. My own little joke. And no intent to demean you. I want you to carry a young child on your shoulders, to move him more rapidly than his short legs will carry him."
"As you wish, Mother Superior."
"No objections, no more questions." Questions were there, but the answers would come in their own time, and Straggy knew it. Magic time. Withdrawing her hand, Odrade said, "Your name?"
"Straggy, Mother Superior.
Alona Straggy." "Rest easy, Straggy. I will see to the orchards. We need them for morale as much as for food. You report to reassignment tonight. Tell them I want you in my workroom at 6 tomorrow morning."
I will be there, Mother Superior. Will I continue to mark your map? As Odraid was rising to leave. For now, Stregi. But ask reassignment for a new acolyte and begin training her. Soon, you will be much too busy for the map.
Thank you, Mother Superior.
The desert is growing very fast. Striggy's words gave Odraid a certain satisfaction, dispelling gloom that had hampered her most of the day. The cycle was getting another chance, turning once more, as it was impelled to do by those subterranean forces called life and love, and other unnecessary labels. Thus it turns, thus it renews. Magic. What witchery could take your attention from this miracle? In her workroom, she issued an order to Weather, then silenced the tools of her office and went to the bow window. Chapter House glowed pale red in the night from reflections of ground lights against low clouds. It gave a romantic appearance to rooftops and walls that Odraid quickly rejected. Romance? There was nothing romantic about what she had done in the Acolyte dining hall.
I have finally done it. I have committed myself. Now, Duncan must restore our Bashar's memories. A delicate assignment.
She continued to stare into the night, suppressing knots in her stomach.
I not only commit myself, but I commit what remains of my sisterhood. So this is how it feels, Tar.
This is how it feels, and your plan is tricky. It was going to rain. Odraid sensed it in the air coming through the ventilators around the window. No need to read a weather dispatch. She seldom did that these days anyway. Why bother? But Stregi's report carried a potent warning. Rains were becoming rarer here, and rather to be welcomed. Sisters would emerge to walk in it despite the cold. There was a touch of sadness in the thought. Each rain she saw brought the same question. Is this the last one? The people of Weather did heroic things to keep an expanding desert dry and the growing areas irrigated. Odraid did not know how they had managed this rain to comply with their order. Before long, they would not be able to obey such commands, even from Mother Superior. The desert will triumph, because that is what we have set in motion. She opened the central panes of her window. The wind at this level had stopped. Just the clouds moving overhead. Wind at higher elevations, carrying things along. A sense of urgency in the weather. The air was chilly. So they had made temperature adjustments to bring this bit of rain. She closed the window, feeling no desire to go outside. Mother Superior had no time to play the game of last rain. One rain at a time. And always out there, the desert moving inexorably toward them. That we can map and watch. But what of the hunter behind me? The nightmare figure with the axe? What map tells me where she is tonight? Religion, emulation of adults by the child, insists past mythologies, guesses, hidden assumptions of trust in the universe, pronouncements made in search of personal power, all mingled with shreds of enlightenment, and always an unspoken commandment, thou shalt not question. We break that commandment daily in the harnessing of human imagination to our deepest creativity. Bene Gesserit Credo. Mirbella sat cross-legged on the practice floor alone, shivering after her exertions. Mother Superior had been here less than an hour this afternoon, and as often happened, Mirbella felt she had been abandoned in a fever dream. Odraid's parting words reverberated in the dream. The hardest lesson for an acolyte to learn is that she must always go the limit. Your abilities will take you farther than you imagine. Don't imagine, then. Extend yourself.
What is my response?
that I was taught to cheat. Odrade had done something to call up the patterns of childhood and honored mater education. I learned cheating as an infant, how to simulate a need and gain attention. Many how-tos in the cheating pattern. The older she got, the easier the cheating. She had learned what the big people around her were demanding. I regurgitated on demand. That was called education. Why were the Bene Gesserit so remarkably different in their teaching? I don't ask you to be honest with me, Odrade had said. Be honest with yourself. Mirbella despaired of ever rooting out all of the cheating in her past. Why should I? More cheating. Damn you, Odrade. Only after the words were out did she realize she had spoken them aloud. She started to put a hand to her mouth and aborted the movement. Fever said, "What's the difference?" Educational bureaucracies dull a child's questing sensitivity. Odrade explaining. The young must be damped down. Never let them know how good they can be. That brings change. Spend lots of committee time talking about how to deal with exceptional students. Don't spend any time dealing with how the conventional teacher feels threatened by emerging talents and squelches them because of a deep-seated desire to feel superior and safe in a safe environment. She was talking about honored maters. Conventional teachers? There it was, behind that facade of wisdom, the Bene Gesserit were unconventional. They often did not think about teaching, they just did it. Gods, I want to be like them. The thought shocked her, and she leaped to her feet, launching herself into a training routine for wrists and arms. Realization bit deeper than ever. She did not want to disappoint these teachers. Candor and honesty. Every acolyte heard that. Basic tools of learning, Odrade said. Distracted by her thoughts, Mirbella tumbled hard and stood up, rubbing a bruised shoulder. She had thought at first that the Bene Gesserit protestation must be a lie. I am being so candid with you that I must tell you about my unswerving honesty. But actions confirmed their claim. Odrade's voice persisted in the fever dream. That is how you judge. They had something in the mind, in memory, and a balance of intellect no honored mater had ever possessed. This thought made her feel small. Enter corruption. It was like liver spots in her feverish thoughts. But I have talent. It required talent to become an honored mater. Do I still think of myself as an honored mater? The Bene Gesserit knew she had not fully committed herself to them. What skills do I have that they could possibly want? Not the skills of deception. Do actions agree with words? There's your measure of reliability. Never confine yourself to the words. Mirbella put her hands over her ears. Shut up, Odrade! How does a truth-sayer separate sincerity from a more fundamental judgment? Mirbella dropped her hands to her sides. Maybe I'm really sick. She swept her gaze around the long room. No one there to utter these words. Anyway, it was Odrade's voice. If you convince yourself, sincerely, you can speak utter balderdash. Marvelous old word, look it up. Absolute poppylarky in every word, and you will be believed. But not by one of our truth-sayers. Mirbella's shoulders sagged. She began to wander aimlessly around the practice floor. Was there no place to escape? Look for the consequences, Mirbella. That's how you ferret out things that work. That's what our much-vaunted truths are all about. Pragmatism? Idaho found her then and responded to the wild look in her eyes. What's wrong? I think I'm sick. Really sick. I thought it was something Odrade did to me, but he caught her as she fell. Help us! For once, he was glad of the Comeyes. Asuk was with them in less than a minute. She bent over Mirbella, where Idaho cradled her on the floor. The examination was brief. The Sook, a graying older reverend mother, with a traditional diamond brand on her forehead, straightened and said, "Overstressed. She's not trying to find her limits. She's going beyond them. We'll put her back into the sensitizing class before we let her continue. I'll send the proctors." Odraid found Mirbella in the proctor's ward that evening, propped up in bed, two proctors taking turns testing her muscle responses. A small gesture, and they left Odraid alone with Mirbella. "I tried to avoid complicating things," Mirbella said. "Candor and honesty." "Trying to avoid complications often creates them." Odraid sank into a chair beside the bed and put a hand on Mirbella's arm. Muscles quivered under the hand. "We say words are slow, feelings faster." Odraid withdrew. "What decisions have you been making?"
"You let me make decisions?"
"Don't sneer." She lifted a hand to prevent interruption. "I didn't take your previous conditioning into sufficient account. The Honored Maters left you practically incapable of making decisions. Typical of power-hungry societies. Teach their people to diddle around forever. Decisions bring bad results. You teach avoidance."
"What's that have to do with me collapsing?"
Resentful. "Mirbella, the worst products of what I'm describing are almost basket cases. Can't make decisions about anything, or leave them until the last possible second, and then leap at them like desperate animals."
"You told me to go the limit!"
Almost wailing. "Your limits, Mirbella, not mine. Not Bell's, or those of anyone else. Yours."
"I've decided I want to be like you."
Very faint.
"Marvelous! I don't believe I've ever tried to kill myself, especially when I was pregnant."
In spite of herself, Mirbella grinned. Odraid stood. "Sleep. You're going into a special class tomorrow where we'll work on your ability to measure decisions with sensitivity to your limits. Remember what I told you. We take care of our own."
"Am I yours?"
Almost whispered. "Since you repeated the oath before the proctors." Odraid turned out the lights as she left. Mirbella heard her speak to someone before the door closed. "Stop fussing with her. She needs rest." Mirbella closed her eyes. The fever dream was gone, but in its place was her own memory.
"I am a Bene Gesserit. I exist only to serve."
She heard herself saying those words to the proctors, but memory gave them an emphasis not in the original.
"They knew I was being cynical."
"What could you hide from such women?" She felt the remembered hand of the proctor on her forehead and heard the words that had possessed no meaning until this moment.
"I stand in the sacred human presence. As I do now, so should you stand someday. I pray to your presence that this be so. Let the future remain uncertain, for that is the canvas to receive our desires. Thus the human condition faces its perpetual tabula rasa. We possess no more than this moment where we dedicate ourselves continuously to the sacred presence we share and create." Conventional, but unconventional. She realized that she had not been physically or emotionally prepared for this moment. Tears flowed down her cheeks.
Laws to suppress tend to strengthen what they would prohibit. This is the fine point on which all the legal professions of history have based their job security. Bene Gesserit Coda. On her restless prowlings through Central, infrequent these days, but more intense because of that, Odraid looked for signs of slackness. and especially for areas of responsibility that were running too smoothly. The senior watchdog had her own watch words. Show me a completely smooth operation, and I'll show you someone who's covering mistakes. Real boats rock. She said this often, and it became an identifying phrase that sisters and even some acolytes employed to comment on Mother Superior. Real boats rock. Soft chuckles. Belanda accompanied Odred on today's early morning inspection, not mentioning that once a month had been stretched to once every 2 months, if that. This inspection was a week past the mark. Bell wanted to use this time for warnings about Idaho, and she had dragged Tamerlane along, although Tam was supposed to be reviewing Proctor performance at this hour. Two against one, Odred wondered. She did not think Bell or Tam suspected what Mother Superior intended. Well, it would come out, as had Taraza's plan. In its own time, Atar? Down the corridors they stalked, black robes swishing with urgency, eyes missing little. It was all familiar, and yet they looked for things that were new. Odred carried her earsee over her left shoulder like a misplaced diving weight. Never be out of communication range these days. Behind the scenes in any Bene Gesserit center were the support facilities. Clinic hospital, kitchen, morgue, garbage control, reclamation systems attached to sewage and garbage, transport and communications, kitchen provisioning, training and physical maintenance halls, schools for acolytes and postulants, quarters for all of the denominations, meeting centers, testing facilities, and much more. Personnel often changed because of the scattering and movement of people into new responsibilities, all according to subtle Bene Gesserit awareness. But tasks and places for them remained. As they strode swiftly from one area to another, Odred spoke of the sisterhood scattering, not trying to hide her dismay at the atomic family they had become. I find it difficult to contemplate humankind spreading into an unlimited universe, Tam said. The possibilities. Infinite numbers game. Odred stepped across a broken curb. That should be repaired. We've been playing the infinity game since we learned to jump fold space. There was no joy in Belanda. It's not a game. Odred could appreciate Belanda's feelings. We have never seen empty space. Always more galaxies. Tam's right. It's daunting when you focus on that golden path. Memories of explorations gave the Sisterhood a statistical handle on it, but little else. So many habitable planets in a given assemblage, and among those, an expected additional number that could be terraformed. What's evolving out there? Tamerlane demanded. A question they could not answer. Ask what infinity might produce, and the only answer possible was anything. Any good, any evil, any god, any devil. What if honored maters are fleeing something? Odred asked. Interesting possibility? These speculations are useless, Belanda muttered. We don't even know if fold space introduces us to one universe or many, or even an infinite number of expanding and collapsing bubbles. Did the Tyrant understand this any better than we do? Tamerlane asked. They paused while Odred looked into a room where five advanced acolytes and a proctor studied a projection of regional melange stores. The crystal holding the information performed an intricate dance in the projector, bouncing on its beam like a ball on a fountain. Odred saw the summation and turned away before scowling. Tam and Bell did not see Odred's expression. We will have to start limiting access to Melange data. Too depressing to morale. Administration. It all came back to Mother Superior. Delegate heavily to only the same people, and you fell into bureaucracy. Odrade knew she depended too much on her inner sense of administration, a system frequently tested and revised, using automation only where essential. The machinery, they called it. By the time they became Reverend Mothers, all of them had some sensitivity to the machinery, and tended to use it without question thereafter. There lay the danger. Odrade pressed for constant improvements, even tiny ones, to introduce change into their activities. Randomness. No absolute patterns that others could find and use against them. One person might not see such shifts in a lifetime, but differences over longer periods were sure to be measurable. Odrade's party came down to ground level and onto the major thoroughfare of Central. The Way, sisters called it. An in-joke referring to the training regimen popularly known as the Bene Gesserit Way. The Way reached from the square beside Odrade's tower to the southern outskirts of the urban area, straight as a lasergun beam, almost 12 clicks of tall buildings and low ones. The low ones all had something in common. They had been built strong enough to expand upward. Odrade flagged an open transporter with empty seats, and the three of them crowded into a space where they could continue to talk. Frontage on the Way carried an old-fashioned appeal, Odrade thought. Buildings such as these, with their tall rectangular windows of insulating plaz, had framed Bene Gesserit ways through much of the sisterhood's history. Down the center ran a line of elms, genetically tailored for height and narrow profile. Birds nested in them, and the morning was bright with flitting spots of red and orange. Orioles, tanagers. Is it dangerously patterned for us to prefer this familiar setting? Odrade led them off the transporter at tipsy trail, thinking how Bene Gesserit humor came out in curious names. Waggish in the streets. Tipsy trail because the foundation of one building had subsided slightly, giving that structure a curiously drunken appearance. The one member of the group stepping out of line. Like Mother Superior, only they don't know it yet. Her ear sea buzzed as they came to Tower Lane. Mother Superior? It was Streggy. Without stopping, Odrade signaled that she was online. You asked for a report on Rebella? Sook Central says she is fit for assigned classes. Then assign her. They continued down Tower Lane, all one-story buildings. Odrade spared a brief glance for the low buildings on both sides of the street. A two-story addition was being made to one of them. Might be a real Tower Lane here someday, and the joke, such as it was, abandoned. It was argued that naming was just a convenience anyway, and they might as well enjoy this venture into what was a delicate subject for the sisterhood. Odrade stopped abruptly on a busy walkway and turned to her companions. What would you say if I suggested we name streets and places after departed sisters? You're full of nonsense today, Belanda accused. They are not departed, Tamerlane said. Odrade resumed her prowling walk. She had expected that. Belle's thoughts could almost be heard. We carry the departed around in other memory. Odrade wanted no argument here in the open, but she thought her idea had merit. Some sisters died without sharing. Major memory lines were duplicated, but you lost the thread and its terminated carrier. Shuang Yu of the Gamu Keep had gone that way, killed by attacking honored maters. Plenty of memories remained to carry her good qualities and complexities. One hesitated to say her mistakes taught more than her successes. Belanda increased her pace to walk beside Odrade, in a relatively empty stretch. I must speak of Idaho. Amentat, yes, but those multiple memories, supremely dangerous. They were passing a morgue, the strong smell of antiseptics even in the street. The arched doorway stood open. Who died? Odred asked, ignoring Balanda's anxiety.
A proctor from Section 4, and an orchard maintenance man, Tamlane said.
Tam always knew. Balanda was furious at being ignored, and made no attempt to hide it.
Will you two stick to the point?
What is the point? Odred asked, very mild. They emerged on the south terrace and stopped at the stone rail to look over the plantations, vineyards, and orchards. The morning light had a dusty haze in it, not at all like the mists created of moisture.
You know the point.
Bell would not be deflected. Odred stared at the vista, pressing herself against the stones. The railing was frigid. That mist out there was a different color, she thought. Sunlight came through dust with a different reflective spectrum. More bounce and sharpness to the light, absorbed in a different way. The nimbus was tighter. The blowing dust and sand crept into every crevice the way water did, but the grating and rasping betrayed its source. The same with Bell's persistence. No lubrication.
That's desert light, Odred said, pointing.
Stop avoiding me, Balanda said.
Odred chose not to answer. The dusty light was a classical thing, but not reassuring in the way of the elder painters and their misty mornings. Tamerlane came up beside Odred.
Beautiful in its own way.
The remote tone said she made other memory comparisons similar to Odred's. If that's how you were conditioned to look for beauty. But something deep within Odred said this was not the beauty for which she longed. In the shallow swales below them, where once there had been greenery, now there was dryness and a sense of the earth being gutted, the way ancient Egyptians had prepared their dead, dried to essential matter, preserved for their eternity. Desert as deathmaster, swaddling the dirt in nitrin, embalming our beautiful planet with all of its jewels concealed. Balanda stood behind them, muttering and shaking her head, refusing to look at what their planet would become. Odred almost shuddered in a sudden thrust of simulflow. Memory flooded her. She felt herself searching C.H. Tabor's ruins, finding desert-embalmed bodies of spice pirates left where killers had dropped them. What is C.H. Tabor now? A molten flow solidified and without anything to mark its proud history. Honored maters, killers of history.
If you won't eliminate Idaho, then I must protest you're using him as a mentat.
Bell was such a fussy woman. Odred noted that she was showing her age more than ever. Reading lenses on her nose even now. They magnified her eyes until she had the look of a great orbed fish. Use of lenses, and not one of the more subtle prostheses, said something about her. She flaunted a reverse vanity that announced, I am greater than the devices my failing senses require. Balanda was definitely irritated by Mother Superior.
Why are you staring at me that way?
Odred, caught by abrupt awareness of a weakness in her counsel, shifted her attention to Tamerlane. Cartilage never stopped growing, and this had enlarged Tam's ears, nose, and chin. Some reverend mothers adjusted this by metabolism control, or sought regular surgical correction. Tam would not bow to such vanity.
Here's what I am. Take it or leave it. My advisors are too old, and I should be younger and stronger to have these problems on my shoulders.
Oh, damn this for a lapse into self-pity. Only one supreme danger. Action against survival of the Sisterhood. Duncan is a superb mentat. Odrade spoke with all the force of her position. But I use none of you beyond your capabilities. Belanda remained silent. She knew a mentat's weaknesses. Mentats, Odrade thought. They were like walking archives, but when you most needed answers, they relapsed into questions. I don't need another mentat, Odrade said. I need an inventor. When Belanda still did not speak, Odrade said, I am freeing his mind, not his body. I insist on an analysis before you open all data sources to him. Considering Belanda's usual stance, that was mild. But Odrade did not trust it. She detested those sessions, endless rehashing of archival reports. Belanda doted on them. Belanda of archival minutiae and boring excursions into irrelevant details. Who cared if Reverend Mother X preferred skimmed milk on her porridge? Odrade turned her back on Belanda and looked at the southern sky. Dust. We would sift more dust. Belanda would be flanked by assistants. Odrade felt boredom just imagining it. No more analysis. Odrade spoke more sharply than she had intended. I do have a point of view. Belanda sounded hurt. Point of view? Are we no more than sensory windows on our universe, each with only a point of view? Instincts and memories of all types, even archives. None of these things spoke for themselves except by compelling intrusions. None carried weight until formulated in a living consciousness. But whoever produced the formulation tipped the scales. All order is arbitrary. Why this datum rather than some other? Any Reverend Mother knew events occurred in their own flux, their own relative environment. Why couldn't a mentat Reverend Mother act from that knowledge? Do you refuse counsel? That was Tamerlane. Was she siding with Bell? When have I ever refused counsel? Odrade let her outrage show. I am refusing another of Bell's archival merry-go-rounds. Belanda intruded. Then, in reality... Bell, don't talk to me about reality. Let her simmer in that. Reverend Mother and Mentat. There is no reality. Only our own order imposed on everything. A basic Bene Gesserit dictum. There were times, and this was one of them, when Odrade wished she had been born in an earlier era. A Roman matron in the long packs of the aristocrats, or a much pampered Victorian. But she was trapped by time and circumstances. Trapped forever. Must face that possibility. The Sisterhood might have only a future confined to secret hideaways, always fearing discovery. The future of the hunted. And here at Central, we may be allowed no more than one mistake. I've had enough of this inspection. Odrade called for private transport and hurried them back to her workroom. What will we do if the hunters come upon us here? Each of them had their own scenario, a little playlet full of planned reactions. But every Reverend Mother was sufficiently a realist to know her playlet might be more hindrance than help. In the workroom, morning light harshly revealing on everything around them, Odrade sank into her chair and waited for Tamerlane and Belanda to take their seats. No more of those damned analysis sessions. She really needed access to something better than archives. Better than anything they had ever used before. Inspiration. Odrade rubbed her legs, feeling muscles tremble. She had not slept well for days. This inspection left her feeling frustrated. One mistake could end us, and I am about to commit us to a no-return decision. Am I being too tricky? Her advisors argued against tricky solutions. They said the sisterhood must move with steady assurance, the ground ahead known in advance. Everything they did lay counterpoised by the disaster awaiting them at the slightest misstep. And I am on the tightrope over the chasm. Did they have room to experiment, to test possible solutions? They all played that game. Belle and Tam screened a constant flow of suggestions, but nothing more effective than their atomic scattering. We must be prepared to kill Idaho at the slightest sign he is a Quetzalcoatl, Belanda said. Don't you have work to do? Get out of here, both of you! As they stood, the workroom around Audrey took on an alien feeling. What was wrong? Belanda stared down at her with that awful look of censure. Tamerlane appeared more wise than she could possibly be. What is it about this room? The workroom would have been recognized for its function by humans from pre-space history. What felt so alien? A work table was a work table, and the chairs were in convenient positions. Belle and Tam preferred chair dogs. Those would have seemed odd to the early human in other memories she suspected was coloring her view. The Redulian crystals might glisten strangely, the light pulsing in them and blinking. Messages dancing above the table might be surprising. Instruments of her labors could appear strange to an early human sharing her awareness. But it felt alien to me. Are you all right, Dar? Tam spoke with concern. Odraid waved her away, but neither woman moved. Things were happening in her mind that could not be blamed on the long hours and insufficient rest. This was not the first time she had felt she worked in alien surroundings. The previous night, while eating a snack at this table, the surface littered with assignment orders, as it was now, she had found herself just sitting and staring at uncompleted work. Which sisters could be spared from what posts for this terrible scattering? How could they improve survival chances of the few sand trout the scattered sisters took? What was a proper allotment of melange? Should they wait before sending more sisters into the unknown? Wait for the possibility that Saitali could be induced to tell them how axolotl tanks produce the spice? Odraid recalled that the alien feeling had occurred to her as she chewed on a sandwich. She had looked at it, opening it slightly. What is this thing I'm eating? Chicken liver and onions on some of the best chapter house bread. Questioning her own routines, that was part of this alien sensation. You look ill, Belanda said. Just fatigue, Odraid lied. They knew she was lying, but would they challenge her? You both must be equally tired. Affection in her tone. Belle was not satisfied. You set a bad example. What, me? The jesting was not lost on Belle. You know damned well you do. It's your displays of affection, Tamerlane said. Even for Belle. I don't want your damned affection. It's wrong. Only if I let it rule my decisions, Belle. Only then. Belanda's voice fell to a husky whisper. Some think you're a dangerous romantic, Dar. You know what that could do. Ally sisters with me for other than our survival? Is that what you mean? Sometimes you give me a headache, Dar. It's my duty and right to give you a headache. When your head fails to ache, you become careless. Affections bother you, but hates don't. I know my flaw. You couldn't be a reverend mother and not know it. The workroom once more had become a familiar place, But now Odraid knew a source of her alien feelings. She was thinking of this place as part of ancient history, viewing it as she might when it was long gone, as it certainly would be if her plan succeeded. She knew what she had to do now. Time to reveal the first step.
Careful.
Yes, Tar. I'm as cautious as you were. Tam and Bell might be old, but their minds were sharp when necessity required it. Odraid fixed her gaze on Bell. Patterns, Bell. It is our pattern not to offer violence for violence, raising a hand to stop Bell's response. Yes, violence builds more violence, and the pendulum swings until the violent ones are shattered.
What are you thinking? Tam demanded.
Perhaps we should consider baiting the bull more strongly.
We dare not. Not yet.
But we also dare not sit here witlessly waiting for them to find us. Lampadas and our other disasters tell us what will happen when they come.
When?
Not if. As she spoke, Odraid sensed the chasm beneath her, the nightmare hunter with the axe ever nearer. She wanted to sink into the nightmare, turning there to identify the one who stalked them, but dared not. That had been the mistake of the Kwisatz Haderach.
You do not see that future. You create it.
Tamerlane wanted to know why Odraid raised this issue.
Have you changed your mind, Dar?
Our Golateg is 10 years old.
Much too young for us to attempt restoring his original memories, Belanda said.
Why have we recreated Teg if not for violent uses? Odraid asked.
Oh, yes, as Tam started to object.
Teg did not always solve our problems with violence. The peaceful Bashar could deflect enemies with reasonable words.
Tam spoke musingly. But honored maters may never negotiate,
unless we drive them to extremis.
I think you are proposing to move too fast, Belanda said.
Trust Bell to reach a Mentat summation.
Odraid drew in a deep breath and looked down at her work table. It had come at last.
On that morning when she had removed the baby Gola from his obscene tank, she had sensed this moment waiting for her. Even then she had known she would put this goal into the crucible before his time, ties of blood notwithstanding. Reaching beneath her table, Odraid touched a call field. Her two counselors stood silently waiting. They knew she was about to say something important. One thing a mother superior could be sure of. Her sisters listened to her with great care, with an intensity that would have gratified someone more ego-bound than a reverend mother.
Politics, Odraid said.
That snapped them to attention, a loaded word. When you entered Bene Gesserit politics, marshaling your powers for the rise to eminence, you became a prisoner of responsibility. You saddled yourself with duties and decisions that bound you to the lives of those who depended on you. This was what really tied the sisterhood to their mother superior. That one word told counselors and the watchdogs the first among equals had reached a decision. They all heard the small scuffling sound of someone arriving outside the workroom door. Odraid touched the white plate in the near right corner of her table. The door behind her opened, and Stregi stood there awaiting the mother superior's orders.
Bring him, Odraid said.
Yes, Mother Superior. Almost emotionless. A very promising acolyte, that Stregi. She stepped out of sight and returned leading Miles Teg by the hand. The boy's hair was quite blonde, but streaked with darker lines that said the light coloration would go dark when he matured. His face was narrow, nose just beginning to show that hawkish angularity so characteristic of Atreides males. His blue eyes moved alertly, taking in room and occupants with expectant curiosity.
Wait outside, please, Stregi.
Odraid waited for the door to close. The boy stood looking at Odraid with no sign of impatience.
"Miles Teg Gola," Odraid said. "You remember Tamerlane and Belanda, of course."
He favored the two women with a short glance, but remained silent, apparently unmoved by the intensity of their inspection. Tamerlane frowned. She had disagreed from the first with calling this child a Gola. Golas were grown from cells of a cadaver. This was a clone, just as Saitali was a clone.
"I am going to send him into the no-ship with Duncan and Mervella," Odraid said. "Who better than Duncan to restore Miles to his original memories?"
"Poetic justice," Belanda agreed.
She did not speak her objections, although Odraid knew they would come out when the boy had gone.
"Too young."
"What does she mean, poetic justice?" Teg asked.
His voice had a piping quality.
"When the Bashar was on Gamu, he restored Duncan's original memories."
"Is it really painful?"
"Duncan found it so. Some decisions must be ruthless."
Odraid thought that a great barrier to accepting the fact that you could make your own decisions. Something she would not be required to explain to Mervella.
"How do I soften the blow?"
"There were times when you could not soften it. In fact, when it was kinder to rip off the bandages in one swift shot of agony."
"Can this Duncan Idaho really give me back my memories from before?"
"He can, and he will."
"Are we not being too precipitous?" Tamerlane asked.
"I've been studying accounts of the Bashar," Teg said. "He was a famous military man and a mentat."
"And you're proud of that, I suppose?" Belle was taking out her objections on the boy.
"Not especially."
He returned her gaze without flinching.
"I think of him as someone else. Interesting, though."
"Someone else," Belanda muttered.
She looked at Odraid with ill-concealed disagreement.
"You're giving him the deep teaching."
"As his birth mother did."
"Will I remember her?" Teg asked.
Odraid gave him a conspiratorial smile, one they had shared often in their orchard walks.
"You will.
Everything?"
"You'll remember all of it. Your wife, your children, the battles, everything."
"Send him away," Belanda said.
The boy smiled, but looked to Odraid, awaiting her command.
"Very well, Miles," Odraid said.
"Tell Stregi to take you to your new quarters in the no-ship. I'll come along later and introduce you to Duncan."
"May I ride on Stregi's shoulders?"
"Ask her." Impulsively, Teg dashed up to Odraid, lifted himself onto his toes, and kissed her cheek.
"I hope my real mother was like you."
Odraid patted his shoulder.
"Very much like me. Run along now."
When the door closed behind him, Tamerlane said,
"You haven't told him you're one of his daughters?"
"Not yet."
"Will Idaho tell him?"
"If it's indicated."
Belanda was not interested in petty details.
"What are you planning, Dar?"
Tamerlane answered for her.
"A punishment force commanded by our mentat Bashar. It's obvious."
She took the bait.
"Is that it?"
Belanda demanded. Odraid favored them both with a hard stare. "Teg was the best we ever had. If anyone can punish our enemies..."
"We'd better start growing another one," Tamerlane said. "I don't like the influence Mervella may have on him," Belanda said. "Will Idaho cooperate?" Tamerlane asked.
"He will do what an Atreides asks of him." Odraid spoke with more confidence than she felt, but the words opened her mind to another source of the alien feelings.
"I'm seeing us as Mervella sees us. I can think like at least one honored mater."
"We do not teach history. We recreate the experience. We follow the chain of consequences, the tracks of the beast in its forest.
Look behind our words, and you see the broad sweep of social behavior that no historian has ever touched. Bene Gesserit, Panoplia Propheticus. Saitali whistled while he walked down the corridor fronting his quarters, taking his afternoon exercise, down and back, whistling. Get them accustomed to me whistling. As he whistled, he composed a ditty to go with the sound. Slilazu sperm does not talk. Over and over, the words rolled in his mind. They could not use his cells to bridge the genetic gap and learn his secrets. They must come to me with gifts. Odrade had stopped by to see him earlier, on my way to confer with Mirbella. She mentioned the captive honored mater to him frequently. There was a purpose, but he had no idea what it might be. Threat, always possible. It would be revealed eventually. I hope you are not fearful, Odrade had said. They had been standing at his food slot while he waited for lunch to appear. The menu was never quite to his liking, but acceptable. Today he had asked for seafood. No telling what form it would take. Fearful? Of you? Ah, dear Mother Superior, I am priceless to you alive. Why should I fear? My council reserves judgment on your latest requests. I expected that. It's a mistake to hobble me, he said. Limits your choices. Weakens you. Those words had taken several days of planning for him to compose. He waited for their effect. It depends on how one intends to employ the tool, Master Saitali. Some tools break when you don't use them properly. Damn you, witch! He smiled, showing his sharp canines. Testing to instinction, Mother Superior? She made one of her rare sallies into humor. Do you really expect me to strengthen you? For what do you bargain now, Saitali? So I am no longer Master Saitali. Strike her with the flat of the blade. You scatter your sisters, hoping some will escape destruction. What are the economic consequences of your hysterical reaction? Consequences. They always talk about consequences. We trade for time, Saitali. Very solemn. He gave this a silent moment of reflection. The Komais were watching them. Never forget it. Economics, witch. Who and what do we buy and sell? This alcove by the food slot was a strange place for bargaining, he thought. Bad management of the economy. The management hustle, the planning and strategy session, should occur behind closed doors, in high rooms with views that did not distract the occupants from the business at hand. The serial memories of his many lives would not accept that. Necessity. Humans conduct their merchant affairs wherever they can. On the decks of sailing ships, in tawdry streets full of bustling clerks, in the spacious halls of a traditional bourse, with information flowing above their heads for all to see. Planning and strategy might come from those high rooms, but the evidence of it was like the common information of the bourse, there for all to see. So let the Komais watch. What are your intentions toward me, Mother Superior? To keep you alive and strong. Careful, careful. But not give me a free hand. Saitali, you speak of economics, and then want something free. But my strength is important to you? Believe it, I do not trust you. The food slot took that moment to disgorge his lunch. A white fish sautéed in a delicate sauce. He smelled herbs. Water in a tall glass, faint aroma of melange, a green salad. One of their better efforts. He felt himself salivating. Enjoy your lunch, Master Saitali. There is nothing in it to harm you. Is that not a measure of trust? When he did not respond, she said, "What does trust have to do with our bargaining? What game is she playing now?" "You tell me what you intend for honored maters, but you do not say what you intend for me." He knew he sounded plaintive, unavoidable. "I intend to make the honored maters aware of their mortality, as you do with me." Was that satisfaction in her eyes? Cytally. How soft her voice. "People thus made aware truly listen. They hear you." She glanced at his tray. "Would you like something special?" He drew himself up as best he could. "A small stimulant drink. It helps when I must think." "Of course. I'll see that it's sent down at once." She turned her attention out of the alcove toward the main room of his quarters. He watched where she paused, her gaze shifting from place to place, item to item. "Everything in its place, witch. I am not an animal in its cave. Things must be convenient, or I can find them without thinking. Yes, those are stimpins beside my chair. So I use pens, but I avoid alcohol. You notice?" The stimulant, when it came, tasted of a bitter herb he was a moment identifying. Casmin, a genetically modified blood strengthener from the Gamu Pharmacopoeia. Did she intend to remind him of Gamu? They were so devious, these witches. Poking fun at him over the question of economics, he felt the sting of this as he turned at the end of his corridor and continued his exercise in a brisk walk back to his quarters. What glue had actually held the old empire together? Many things, some small and some large, but mostly economic. Lines of connection, thought of often as conveniences. And what kept them from blasting one another out of existence? The Great Convention. You blast anyone, and we unite to blast you. He stopped outside his door, brought up short by a thought. Was that it? How could punishment be enough to stop the greedy Powinda? Did it come down to a glue composed of intangibles, the censure of your peers? But what if your peers balked at no obscenity? You could do anything. And that said something about honored maters. It certainly did. He longed for a Sagra chamber in which to bare his soul. The Yagist is gone. Am I the last Mershik? His chest felt empty. It was an effort to breathe. Perhaps it would be best to bargain more openly with the women of Shaitan. No! That is Shaitan himself tempting me. He entered his chambers in a chastened mood. I must make them pay. Make them pay dearly. Dearly, dearly, dearly. Each dearly accompanied a step toward his chair. When he sat, his right hand reached out automatically for a pen. Soon he felt his mind driving at speed, thoughts pouring through in marvelous array. They do not guess how well I know the Ixion ship. It's here in my head. He spent the next hour deciding how he would record these moments when it came time to tell his fellows how he had triumphed over the Powinda. With God's help. They would be glittering words filled with drama and the tensions of his testing. History, after all, was always written by the victors. They say Mother Superior can disregard nothing, a meaningless aphorism until you grasp its other significance. I am the servant of all my sisters. They watch their servant with critical eyes. I cannot spend too much time on generalities, nor on trivia. Mother Superior must display insightful action, else a sense of disquiet penetrates to the farthest corners of her order. Darwi Odraid. Something of what Odraid called my servant self went with her as she walked the halls of Central this morning, making this her exercise rather than take time on a practice floor.
a disgruntled servant. She did not like what she saw. We are too tightly bound up in our difficulties, almost incapable of separating petty problems from great ones. What had happened to their conscience? Although some denied it, Odrade knew there was a Bene Gesserit conscience, but they had twisted and reshaped it into a form not easily recognized. She felt loath to meddle with it. Decisions taken in the name of survival, the missionaria, their interminable Jesuitical arguments, all diverged from something far more demanding of human judgment. The tyrant had known this. To be human, that was the issue. But before you could be human, you had to feel it in your guts. No clinical answers. It came down to a deceptive simplicity whose complex nature appeared when you applied it. Like me, you looked inward and found who and what you believed you were. Nothing else would serve. So what am I? Who asks that question? It was a skewering thrust from other memory. Odrade laughed aloud, and a passing proctor named Praska stared at her in astonishment. Odrade waved to Praska and said, "It's good to be alive. Remember that." Praska produced a faint smile before going on about her business. "So who asks, what am I?" Dangerous question. Asking it put her in a universe where nothing was quite human. Nothing matched the undefined thing she sought. All around her, clowns, wild animals, and puppets reacted to the pull of hidden strings. She sensed the strings that jerked her into movement. Odrade continued along the corridor toward the tube that would take her up to her quarters. Strings. What came with the egg? We speak glibly of the mind and its beginning. But what was I before the pressures of living shaped me? It wasn't enough to seek something natural. No noble savage. She had seen plenty of those in her lifetime. The strings jerking them were quite visible to a Bene Gesserit. She felt the taskmaster within her, strong today. It was a force she sometimes disobeyed or avoided. Taskmaster said, "Strengthen your talents. Do not flow gently in the current. Swim. Use it or lose it." With a gasping sensation of near panic, she realized she had barely retained her humanity, that she had been on the point of losing it. "I've been trying too hard to think like an honored mater, manipulating and maneuvering anyone I could. And all in the name of Bene Gesserit survival."